Brass Stacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dennis. This is Carl Padmore.
Mr. Padmore, how are you, sir?
I am good, enjoying the weather, but I know that this type of weather is not always the best for our customers because what this weather speaks to is we would have a halt in the collection of household waste. Because as you would understand, we have to make sure that our crews are safe, equipment is safe. There is a lot of slippage on the road, especially in the north part of the island. Mm-hmm. And those that have hills, we would not want to venture there at all. So therefore, we are appealing to the public to bear with us during this time. So we would have had to cancel a number of our collections this morning. And of course, we would have canceled some yesterday evening because this pattern we are experiencing would have started yesterday, at sometime mid-morning yesterday. Mm-hmm. And it may go into tomorrow. But as soon as we get, we want to call it the all clear because we are operating on the advice from the Met Office. Then we would venture out again. We had our supervisors out. And this morning, through a small window, we did some collections. But then we had to come back in. Also, because we also offer a bulky waste service, we would have had to cancel a number of appointments because the bulky waste calls upon a bobcat and the 10-wheeler truck. And we can't go on Dennis' lawn with the 10-wheeler to get stuck in the lawn, and the bobcat will be stuck as well. So we can't move the bulky waste from his property as well. So we want to say to Dennis and to the entire Barbados that we do apologize, but, you know, it is not man-made. It is what is happening, and we will work to try to get this situation back on stream as soon as we get
the permits.
The all clear. All right, Dennis?
I thank you for doing that for us, sir, and I would again ask you that through your kind office, that there are more regular updates of specific areas when there are challenges and when you're responding so that people would know. Because I agree with you. I have seen, certainly in and around my area, that persons who are accustomed having their collection would have put out their garbage, and certain garbage cans are full. And I would hope that when you do resume your service, that the cans have holes in the bottom so the water would have leaked out, and, you know, we wouldn't then have complaints about, you know, the guys having to go through cans full of water and leach it, and, you know, the various other things that come from having our garbage waiting for a while. I also wanted to thank you in particular for mentioning bulk waste, because sometimes that is forgotten in the process, because persons who have skips, for example, skips collect water, and I am sure it becomes more of a challenge. I know why you're picking on me. I don't have a lawn, but all right, that's okay. And I hope your bobcat drivers and your 18-wheeler drivers are good enough to know how to get bobcats and 18-wheelers out of stuck lawns. But on a serious note, I would like you to work on the, you know, specific areas if you can, so that persons know, okay, we're starting from the north and we're coming down, and starting from the south and moving up, so we'll meet in the center, or we'll start in the center and spread out. Because I know after the rains, you will have more people putting out garbage, and you will have to work extra hard. One other thing quickly, okay, though, Alf.
Yes, please.
I saw a comment on the WhatsApp. I didn't bother to forward it to you. I was just scrolling through, trying to find it while you were talking. But I saw a comment on the WhatsApp that there was someone who was saying that the truck couldn't get into the area because they didn't think the driver was familiar with the area and the turning there, and he had to be guided. Do we have new drivers on routes, or is it just that new trucks may be giving some of the guys some challenges?
Factors there. One, we do have some new drivers, but our trucks are these new ones are taller than the others, so our drivers try to be cautious, because then so often we would pull down a wire from one of the utility companies, and that would of course cause an additional problem to the householder. So we prefer, if the driver is in doubt, stop, report it to the supervisor. We would try as much as possible to get a smaller vehicle in there, are. What we have done, we have contacted the utility companies, and they have come and they've raised the wire somewhat. Those, and so often we are at the mercy of those. Then we are, what we are experiencing now, I can use Dennis Johnson as an example. Because
you could always do that. You could always do that.
Our tolerance level is high. Dennis would have three cars parked by his house, and they would be in the road. Often our truck then can't maneuver these three trucks to get them inside, and we will be blowing. Often we have to get the police and ask Dennis to kindly make use of his garage or of his lawn that is so pristine. We would appreciate, especially during these times, if persons can desist from having their vehicles next to the side of the road and use their driveways. So, yes, Dennis, some new drivers, but we also have to be careful in maneuvering around corners where vehicles are parked in the bend. I mean, and sometimes the householders come out and they are in a rage and we are like, but you know your vehicle is not supposed to be there. If that is not the case and it's a simple case where it's a new development, we have now, Dennis, we have two new hotline numbers that we're going to make available to Dennis and the public of Barbados. 262-5326.
Say it again slowly because we can get a million calls after you finish. 262-5326.
Mm-hmm. And the next one is simple. 262-5327.
Okay.
Okay. And we have our hotline personnel on standby. Mm-hmm. And you can call if your garbage has gone into, let's say, 2 weeks. If it's just a day, please understand the day would have reflected the rainfall. But if your garbage has gone into 2 weeks or 3 weeks, or if you're experiencing a situation through your area that needs us to come in to investigate because vehicles are blocking. Often we bring in the police, we bring in Ministry of Health. Let us know. Flag it. We will work with you. If it's just a day or two, we are giving you the guarantee that by the early part of next week, we should be back on stream once the weather holds up. Yes?
Thank you very much, Alf. And all the best. And let the guys stay safe out there. We need
Thank
our
you.
Essential workers. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
4341790 Brass Tax. Good afternoon. Hello. Good afternoon. Okay, that's the guy who likes to speak to. Hello. Hello. I'm gonna try one more time.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Johnson, when you hear my voice, you know that something forced me to call. Call. I don't call you because
I know.
I ain't got you no politics.
I'm in real shock right now.
Okay. Something that you said which I will leave to last.
Okay.
And something that happened with the taxi man.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I want you to help me with. Now, a couple of weeks ago, our Prime Minister announced that there'd be three debates. And it moved from three to right now it's one. Started with six candidates. And now there are three. Started with moderators, and I think two drop out, and now we're having a new one.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to find out, listening to the governor of the central bank yesterday, with the problems that we have, I want to know if the government could not take that debate to CBC instead of going into our conference center, Saloy, whereby you got made all types of preparations and things like that, which is cost at a time when we don't have no money. And to add it to it, with at least two of the candidates that we know have no chance. What do you think about that?
So it depends on a couple of things. One, does CBC have the space that the presentation would require to have the persons spaced out properly?
Which persons?
Those currently taking part in it?
There are only three
but let's remember that it didn't start off at three. So if you made arrangements to have six and two moderators over 2 days, those arrangements would have to be made. They don't be made on the spur of the moment. And if CBC had to set it up, they would have to have set up the studio in advance, have the room prepared, make sure they have WhatsApp facilities and all the other things they have to do when they have anything coming from the Lloyd Erskine Sandiford Center. Now, I don't know if it's being provided at a cost, what the cost is, or if it's being provided as a national service, or who's carrying it, because I don't have those details. But I can tell you that having worked with the LESC in the past, they don't do things on the fly. They have to prepare for it. They have to get the room ready, and they have to make sure that all the connections, including being able to televise it, which may mean bringing equipment in, has to be done in advance. So you don't just pull it out just like that. Even when they're bringing things from Parliament, if they have to use the outside broadcast bus, it got to be there in advance. Or if they're using Parliament equipment, they got to make sure they're ready. So there are things you have to do to prepare for it that may have gone into place when they had six people and two moderators. I don't know. But so, good question.
Listening to you there now, mm-hmm. you're telling me directly it should have been postponed altogether.
I just tell you that somebody would have to make a decision.
It should have been postponed altogether.
Okay.
Let me get to my next point. Uh-huh. Now, I heard the taxi man and you discussing the 500 or who they're going home and etc.
5,000,
but what I
can
tell you that I know the former governor of the central bank on more than one occasion has been the impression that the only way Barbados can get moving again is if the government purse, this is civil servants' salaries, all the off happen. Mm-hmm. And he said it before he refused to deal with reporters, and even when he was moved from governor, he even went further after he was moved. And at one time, under the last administration, he advised the last government that time I heard him mention the 5,000, when he told them at that time that they could make an arrangement with the IMF for a loan to pay those who would be going redundant. Mm-hmm. But what I was saying not advising you all, because you're more trained than I, on many occasions he brought it up. Sometimes he made a number of 5,000, and certain times he made no number. So that is one. It was an ongoing thing with the governor of the central bank, whereby he felt that the statutory boards and those needed
to be read. And sir, and the point I was making to the gentleman was that after he left the job as governor of the central bank, and he was writing papers and publishing it, he made the claim that one of the things that they could have done, rather than the BERT program and the agreements they made with the IMF, was to trim the public service by that 5,000 figure, and the statutory boards needed to do some things, and he made some other suggestion as well. Yes, sir, I know he did, but I was saying post that.
Not only that, after the government changed, I thought that was going down the road that he asked. Because we went at CBC and the same 94. They went up at Sir Lloyd Erskine Sandiford Center, which is the NCC, National Sports Council. Yeah, and I think the same home, everyone at the Sports Council. And those are things that he recommended. My final point. Mm-hmm. A gentleman called you earlier and he was a little annoyed, like how I am. And I would never like it happen in Barbados, where two men can adopt a child. Now, I could be wrong, but this is me. I'm against two women too, but I would give in to two women more than two men.
Right.
If I had to choose, if I had to make a choice, I would say, look, let two women adopt a boy or a girl. But where I'm concerned, never two men. This is our thing. But what I could not understand with the discussion with you and the gentleman, mm-hmm. is that you took it home by you.
I had to, a reason.
But let me finish what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends. I got a real good personal friend now that his wife died.
Mm-hmm.
They're about 4 or 5 husbands.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the only one in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So to hear that someone, whatever happened, informed, and they came to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's an isolated case, Mr.
No, sir. No, sir, it's not. No, it's
okay,
not.
Okay, let me hear that.
No, sir,
let me
it's
hear.
Not. Sir, because a very prominent attorney at law who represented the Child Care Board said to me, men don't get to raise girl children in this country. And he says so in isolation. He said so out loud. So the reason why I took it home to me was this, because I strongly disagreed with what you just said. Because I am a male and I am a parent, and I do not like anybody suggesting that because a male is a parent, he can't raise a child, but a
but
woman you're could
not
do it.
A parent if you adopt.
Sir, what are you?
I am saying that your situation was a daughter that was yours.
Uh-huh. And?
These two men ain't bring the child in the world.
So let me ask you this question, sir.
It's a far
No, sir. If I decided, right, that my daughter has a good friend whose parents died, but because she's been in my house since she was 5 years old, and my daughter knows her, and I'm raising my daughter, why should I not be able to adopt her?
But, Mr.
Based on what?
Wait. You have a man living there with you?
No, I by myself.
Well, that's the difference.
No, what's the difference, sir? Sir, the point I am
two,
making... Sir, I want to...
About two men.
Sir, and the point I am man. Making... Sir, and the point I am making to you is this. Once you say to me that a man cannot be a parent, whether it's a single man or a man with another man with him, I have a problem because
that
it says to me...
That is only statute works in Barbados.
Which one?
That no man could manage a child, support a child, or raise a child.
Sir, you try to adopt a child in Barbados as a single male and tell me what you find out, okay? I can't answer whether on the statute books or not. I'm just telling you, you try to adopt a child on your own as a single male and tell me what you find out. When you find out, call me back and let me know. Because I am telling you that I have heard from people who have tried. I have even heard from females who have tried. But in the assessment, for whatever reason, they were denied. So if you're telling me that two women could raise a child and you don't have a problem with it, you only ask whether they're same sex or not. It could be two same sex females, or it could be two aunties. That's all right, but if it's two men, you got a problem. And I'm telling you, I know why you're making the distinction, but I am telling you, it says to me as a male that a man cannot be a parent. And I have a problem with that because I take full responsibility for my three children. And there are two girls and there's one boy. And I would not like to think that because I am male, I am told I can't raise my children. So I ain't pushing that on nobody else. Understood. Brass Tacks, good afternoon. Hello.
Hello. Hello, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Carl Padmore here again, sir.
Yes, sir.
I want to use your good office and your good influence to say to the members of the public, 99% of them are well-mannered, but we received a very disturbing call from on the hotline where the person at this word is allowed to go through, is that the stinking PRO and the stinking truck pressed juice in front of his house, and the person was very abusive to our hotline operators. This behavior we will not tolerate as a corporation. We do not pick and choose houses to compress the truck, but when it's full, a lever gives the driver the signal that it's full, and we have to compress. We have recorded the number from the person, and we are taking these insults seriously because this is not the first one, Dennis. And people curse. Yes, you have a right to be annoyed if you do not see a collection, but you do not have a right to be abusive to our staff. We are working to serve you. So while you are home, we still have staff at the office trying to see how best we can service you when the all clear is given.
Mr. Padmore, I would suggest that you forward your complaints to the good people at Flo or whoever your service providers are, because I do believe that abusive phone calls, something that I have issue with. I also have issue with abusive WhatsApp messages, but it happens from time to time. And I take it as being, you know, persons who are obsessed, persons who have nothing to do, or persons who would like to have some attention. But they need to know that abuse of equipment and abuse of people who are paid to carry out a service should not be tolerated. So I would suggest, if you have ways of finding out who abuse your phone numbers, that you raise it with your service providers and send them a warning. I think, and it is really, again, my feeling, that social media has allowed persons with issues to be nasty and feel that they're doing it anonymously, and therefore they're letting their insecurities and their paranoia and whatever else they're affected by run riot. And, you know, sadly, they do that kind of thing. That's the sad part about the way we live, sir. Sorry that you had to put up with abuse, and the person answering the phone, that the first thing they have to put up with is abuse, but that's where we are. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. You were special. I've been holding on for about 40 minutes to talk to you.
Lord, I feel special. On a cold and rainy day. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I had promised after listening to Tuesday's program. In fact, I tried calling on Tuesday, but I had to hang up because it was very close to the end. You would not have been able to take a call. Mm-hmm. Or at least I would not be able to discuss what I wanted to.
Okay.
What I wanted to talk about was the plight of the retiree, because you were talking about financing and minority.
Buying shares.
Mm-hmm. I think I need to clarify something, so I don't know if I'll get around to that today, but I could always call back another time on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was listening to the government apologist, or they call him the stats man, I believe. And he made reference to my name, and obviously my ears perked up. Mm-hmm. And he was speaking about the issue of dual citizenship. Now, I called the program on Sunday, mm-hmm. and I explained an issue, but I wanted to highlight something, because he made reference to me as foreign minister and to the former high commissioner to
London,
to UK, now Reverend Guy Hewitt.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a significant difference which I need to explain, because I think that when people make comments, they need not to confuse the public. And I think in his brief comment, he obviously didn't understand or did not want to understand what I said. And perhaps there's need for further amplification. There are a number of persons who have been in political life that have been that were born in England. I can go to the late Prime Minister Thompson, Irene Sandy for Garnham, Michael Lashley, Guy Hewitt. Himself, no, and I'm sorry, somebody has chosen in 40 minutes to call me while I'm talking to you, but they will hopefully go away. Now, a person born in a country is typically different from a person who decides to acquire a citizenship. So in case I'll use the two countries, well, I'll use the country of Canada, because that was what we were talking about, and I can use UK, they're both Commonwealth countries also. Which introduces another factor. But if you are born in a country, you do not take an oath. That is that you're there, you are a citizen by birth.
Right.
By accident of birth, let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
If as a young person or somebody does it on your behalf as a child or as an adult, you acquire a second citizenship, you take an oath. And in fact, you could actually, I can probably share with you the oath that you do in Canada. And this is what a person says in Canada. I swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, Queen of Canada, her heirs and successors, and that I will faithfully observe the laws of Canada and fulfill my duties as a Canadian citizen. Now, therein lies an issue, because once you have sworn allegiance to a country, now you're going as a foreign diplomat. You know, there's a contradiction right there, because you are actually now, doing two things at the same time, committing to honor that and then being awarded diplomatic status and immunity, et cetera. So that is the first consideration, that there's a difference. The other consideration for persons born in another country where they do not take an oath, a person born to Barbadian parents, automatically is entitled to citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not have to go through, let's say, a person from China or Japan or Nigeria or Ghana or whatever came here and became a citizen. They take an oath. But my child, if I were living overseas and so on, coming to Barbados, does not have to do that because it is an automatic entitlement, so to speak. I mean, these are subtle differences, but they are important differences because when people try to equate situations for political purposes, it then confuses the public who wants to understand.
Let me ask you this question then. As a former minister of government, is it a requirement that to be appointed a minister of government, you have to declare, or you have to declare if you have sworn allegiance to another country? Because in some places, it is necessary. I think I can single out Ghana as being an example. But there are other places where those things are not part of the constitutional arrangements. So do you know, for example, if the gentleman you mentioned, although they were born outside of Barbados, they were born in England, as in the case of Mr. Thompson, etc., were they allowed to have dual citizenship, or did they have to say that they have it, or in any way repudiate it as part of accepting the oath of office?
You see, I think what you're seeing, because when you went through the issue, because there were issues, the question was raised in relation to, like Commissioner Hewitt,
mm-hmm.
we were seeking our remand because mm-hmm. clearly having been born there, but that is where those subtleties
come in, right? Okay.
Now, what I can tell you within the context of Barbados,
mm-hmm.
And I think I read from the section of the I read from the Constitution
mm-hmm.
On Sunday,
yeah.
because the Constitution talks about swearing allegiance.
Correct.
Now, you see, so in essence, if you have become a dual citizen where you are required to swear allegiance, whether it is in Canada, the U.S., or whatever.
You have to renounce it.
Yes, you would. But I can tell you, because there are two things. One, it is there in the Constitution. I was trying to remember. Well, I don't have dual citizenship anywhere. But I don't remember if I was asked. In fact, perhaps in doing the due diligence before they asked.
They checked.
I'd have checked that out, and there was no need to.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in certain documents that you prepare as a matter of course to get passports and other things, these things are asked.
Yes,
but I just
correct.
Felt it very critical to explain that.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, to suggest that, well, I wouldn't even bother to go back to what the guy said, because it was trivializing a serious matter. It was also not speaking to the facts. Mm-hmm. So that was the concern. Let me quickly, though, and I would suggest people can look at the Constitution. They can look, at the same thing for other countries, and they will see how these things are treated. There's an interesting dynamic which you may want to explore in the future, and that has to do with the fact that in the case of the former High Commissioner, it was one Commonwealth country sent into another Commonwealth country, and the Queen was head of both.
Of both, yeah, correct. Because I noted when you said Her Majesty, swearing allegiance to Her Majesty the Queen as the Queen of Canada.
Right, that is what the Canadians have written into their oath.
Mm-hmm.
See, we swear allegiance to the Queen. We don't say, I don't think we say of Barbados.
No, we say to Her Majesty the Queen, her heirs and successors.
Yes, I know
that. That annoys some people who have taken that oath. Yeah.
And some people opt not to take that oath, and there's another process that they go through.
That they go through, yeah.
For some do it for religious reasons, you know, some probably for personal reasons, not wanting to swear to the Queen or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to say to, remember you had a caller on Tuesday asking about minority shareholders, if they have rights.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an article, if the person wants it, they can go online, there's a newspaper article of March 30th, 2017, where Douglas Keith, who you'd had on the program before talking about this,
mm-hmm.
He wrote an article, "Are Minority Shareholders Powerless?" And that actually speaks, as it said in the article, he says the reality is that minority shareholders do not, as a rule, have any powers in Barbadian companies that could have a significant impact on their managerial, operational, and financial policies. And that's a very serious reality. So in other words, you really have little control over decisions of majority shareholders. And so, I mean, as a shareholder of ICBL, I've gotten that big document after the deadline, by the way, and I mean, to go through that. So really and truly, you have very, very, very little power per se. I know some countries have sought to amend their companies act, but it might make sense to have a look at that and to look at the Companies Act of Barbados, because they do speak to the rights of shareholders, and obviously in that sense would make reference to minority shareholders as well as majority shareholders. But, you know, within all of this, there's a concern, Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, for newly retired persons or people intending to retire, because really when you look at the financial landscape in this part of the world, you know, for elderly people, it's kind of scary. What do you do? Let's say a person gets a gratuity. What does he or she do with that?
Yeah.
If the banks, because if my intelligence serves me well, some banks may soon reach zero or close to zero interest rates on saving.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're already there already when you look at the fees that they charge you versus the interest that you get.
Correct.
But it is something that we really have to wrap our minds around in terms of giving people safe
in investing.
To invest the money.
But let me ask you this question. As someone who's been, I think, a supporter of, if not a principal in, one of the larger credit unions in Barbados.
Yes.
Is this not an opportunity for credit unions to say to their membership, if you hold shares in any company, here is a portfolio we can set up where, as a credit union, part of the things we can provide for you is to pool those resources and see how best we can help you manage it as an extension of the services they offer? Or do the rules forbid them from doing that?
Well,
because
credit.
When I look at banking, for example, what I've seen over the years, certainly after I've left, is that banks are trying to find ways to make money as opposed to finding ways to serve their clientele. And they seem not to want to serve their clientele unless it makes them money. So whereas when I was in the banking system eons ago, you would have 50 plus accounts, which encouraged people at 50 years to take a special account to help them prepare for their retirement. They were given special interest. They were given, sometimes they waived withholding tax. They gave them commission-free traveler's checks if they were traveling. In other words, it tried to incentivize them to save more. Whereas now, people call and say, oh, my account was changed without me knowing, and charges are coming out because I'm not putting any money on it, but it's a gratuity I put there, and, you know, I'm waiting until I need it. So it seems to me that rather than incentivizing people to save, it seems to be, well, you know, we holding your money, but you got to pay me to hold it, which to me is counterproductive, children's accounts.
Yeah, but no, it's true. I mean, my son had an account at the credit union. It was a gift from his uncle when he was a year old till it was handed over to him as an 18-year-old when he took control of, you know, he became an adult.
Mm-hmm.
What I also would have done then was to take some of the money out and invest it in government paper, and I taught him about that from the time he was at primary school.
Mm-hmm.
But you raise a very important issue, and I was involved in my credit union. I've just gotten involved not with the credit union itself, but with a subsidiary. Can call it a subsidiary, a body, an entity owned by my credit union. But what I would say is there's a variation to that, because the unfortunate reality in terms of shares and so on, we don't have significant options. In fact, the options are narrowing daily in terms of public companies. What I can tell you, I have been advocating since I did you probably heard this, me mention this on a program before, since April, and I have my notes from back then, 2004. I don't remember the actual date off the top of my head now, But I have been saying to the credit union movement, you have to recognize, and I use the word that you use, say making money as opposed to serving their clientele. And I think that when you think of a bank and a credit union, you have the difference between the two financial institutions.
Mm-hmm.
A bank as a private, as a company, you know, of its shareholders, its primary purpose is to use customers like you and myself to make money for the shareholders.
Cool.
Now, you there has to be a balance. If you don't give me good enough service, I will go somewhere unless I have no option.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
The credit union, on the other hand, it is member-owned, and therefore the priority is on providing
service for your members.
Service. Now, the best service may mean a whole mix of financial services, you know, options, savings, you know, loan, da-da-da-da, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And it can mean charging them the least and trying to give them the biggest return.
Yeah.
And I tell people that's the fundamental difference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we are seeing in Barbados, and it is a liquidity crunch that has existed for a number of years, and it is being transferred to the credit unions because credit unions have been offering, because of the principle of you know, service
unions
to members,
mm-hmm.
have the credit unions have offered in recent times significantly better interest rates on savings, for
correct.
Example.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, contrary to what some people have said, if you do the necessary calculations, their lending rates are competitive and in some
mm-hmm.
cases even lower.
Mm-hmm.
So what really has happened is people have moved their monies to the credit union. But the credit union, that will transfer the liquidity from the commercial banks if you move large percentages of your savings in the bank to the credit union.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, what does the credit union do with that? And my argument is that you are serving the people who are consumers of everything in Barbados, essentially.
Correct.
And therefore, you need to find ways to create investment options. Now, the credit union is constrained by the law to do certain things, and that is why...
That's why I asked about the law, yeah.
Creating another entity
mm-hmm.
Owned by the members is an option, and this is something I've advocated.
Okay.
That we probably need... whether it is a single credit union or the movement as a collective,
mm-hmm.
to look at ways to
expand it.
I tell people there are a couple of things. We have to eat food. We have to live somewhere.
Okay.
You know, people need to be employed in several ways. We talk about financing, entrepreneurs, you know, and so on. So I'm saying that there are opportunities for the credit unions to address that liquidity while working to create jobs to... And all of this can be within the family of the credit union. If we have about 200,000 credit union members across the 30-something credit unions in Barbados...
That's a sizable population.
We have about 50,000 and say we have 150,000 members,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Think
significant.
About it.
Yep, I am. And Maxine, those are the things I would like to see us exploring more in our special programming, and I'll certainly push for it because, let me say this to you, I said it to someone online here a short while ago. I understand that banks are commercial. I understand that they're in the business of making money for their shareholders. The point I was making was that in the past, the incentive was to get a large customer base so they would be able to provide services and make money for their shareholders. Now, it seems that they don't want a large customer base. They don't need small customers. They're concentrating on corporate and finding other ways to make money because now small account holders becoming too expensive for them to maintain their accounts. And therefore, they've shifted their focus without saying so clearly to their clients. When you hear the president of the Bankers Association say, you could go to credit union. Credit union go put their money with us anyhow. It says to me, I don't want you. Now, I may be hearing the wrong thing, but that's what it says to me, that corporate customers and now your outreach and cards and, you know, credit cards, and that's where we're making our money. So the rest, we don't really need mass base anymore. Thanks for your contribution, though. Always interesting. Got a WhatsApp message here that's one of those really annoying things that happens when it rains. Writer says, what can you do when someone actually soaks you with their car? Was standing up and they passed, drove like crazy, and soaked me while other people saw. saw the make and the color of the car and even the number. The challenge is, you know, if, unless somebody take a picture while the water flying all over you, you're really in trouble, because they will ask you, you know, you got the car number, you got this, and when you give the information, is your word against theirs? Oh, and it's a difficult situation. It's one of the reasons there are times you're in a car, and a car passes you, and because they go fast through the water wets the whole car, and even though you're inside the car, you duck, because, you know, you just see water coming flying at you. Ma'am, I really am sorry, but I have to tell you, there's very little you could do. Very little. Except trying to shame the person by saying, you know, car number X just wet me. And then somebody will call and say, that person lie. You know, they're trying to spite me. And it becomes a he say and they say and them said. I really am sorry. I just hope it doesn't affect your health by giving you, you know, some rash or something like that, because the water dirty. Brastax, good afternoon. Hello.
Hey, good afternoon, Dennis. How you doing, brother?
I'm trying to be good on you.
Cool, brother. You know when I call you for information, right?
If I could give you, I will.
Yeah, but before I say what I can say, though, now you talk about cars about cars flashing people, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lady that was walking at Kalamurat today. She's about 90 something years old. She's almost 100, and some person splashed your lady from head to toe.
Uh-huh.
From head to toe. She came to me, right? She came to me, and it was like charged, right? So you know, wash her off and stuff like that. But I wish I had seen the car, man. What I really want to find out from you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is BADMC, do they have a quality control unit?
Can't say that off the top of my head. I have no idea, sir.
You see, a lot of the quality of the chicken that we'd be getting, right, especially chicken wings, a lot of the cases, a lot of the times, I don't want to say regular, but a lot of times, the quality is unsatisfactory, and there's nobody to report it to. And then, you know, like on the box, you know, when you buy a product in Barbados or anywhere in the world, it's supposed to have the label on it, it's supposed to have where it is and telephone number or the email address, all that kind of stuff, and it's not got nothing like that.
There are laws affecting, there are laws in place to specify what has to be put on labels of products. Even locally made ones now, if you make toffees, if you make sugar cakes, you have to put labels on it, and the BNSI has their standards for you to place on the items. Now, whether that extends to a pumpkin that you grow or bananas, if you want to stretch it to that, I can't say that it says, you know, you have to say these are grade A tomatoes, or these are grade B plantains, or that kind of testing. I don't know if it's down to that extreme.
Okay. And then, because, you know, like, okay, and then another issue that you got with down there, all right, is like, you never know when they got chicken wings. You never know. You always got a call. But then when you do call, right, because if you have a business, they have you in the system, and then they're supposed to send you a text, right? I haven't received a text since August, right? I just got to buy my chicken wings to a third party, because every time I call down there or I get down there, I get the runner wrong or something. Never ever smooth process, never. Then sometimes you will get down there and stand up in a long line in the hot sun, and then you go to the counter, you will hear, my, you know, you can only get one case. Well, it's a registered business and my name in here, so what, it can't get at least two. You know, but then you... But my main thing is the quality control, right? It's because when I go in front of my customers now, and I ain't grow the chicken.
Correct.
And they pay a certain price for it. So, you know, and there's no way for me to return it. So, I got to cut my losses, right?
Sir, and that's why I said to you, I don't know how far it extends, but I know there are certain rules and guidelines in place for certain produce, you know, fat content and that type of arrangement, but I don't know how far down it extends. Thank you to all the people who tell me that if that Sergeant Siebert Johnson says, if you're drenched by the vehicle, take the registration number and report it to them. I understand that. I said that to the person online. But the point I made was, how do you prove it? And that's the twist in the tail. I can say T878 splashed me while I stand up by the bus stop in front of the hospital. Now I could say T878 because that was my number. And you're supposed to be on the road right now. But I could say that. But if Larry's the owner of T878 and say, me? I ain't leave my house for the old day park. I hear so in Starcom Network. I mean, I splash you outside the hospital. What do you say at that point? It's the proof that becomes the problem. Not the giving of the number or the make of the car. It's him versus me versus them. People get into accidents with cars. Cars leave the scene. And they have difficulty proving that they were in an accident with car number X in that place until they find the car with the damage done to it. I try to be as honest as possible with my callers. I try to help as far as possible when I can. Thank you for your contributions on this Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Thank you, John, for taking care of things technical. On behalf of our crew, have a good day and a good weekend, because you shouldn't hear me again for the rest of the week.